Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Chris Arsenault. He is the HR manager for domestic manufacturing at New Balance. And he's going to be talking about an engaged workforce, keys to creating a best places to work organization, including how to deal with the generational differences and bridging the gap. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great today, David. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for being on the show today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
You know, New Balance is obviously a great organization, a global organization. You're based here in Maine. Tell me some of the challenges you might see or might face in finding maybe great talent here in the state of Maine.
Well, you know, fortunately, because we are a global organization and we're a brand that people recognize, you know, we oftentimes don't have many problems finding good talent, but I would say that one of the challenges that we do have is that, surprisingly enough, people even in the state of Maine don't realize that we're still making shoes here in the United States. And so when people do realize that, particularly when we're recruiting for manufacturing jobs, you know, they have in their mind what they think a manufacturing, working in manufacturing might look like, you know, based on maybe stories that they've told or their grandparents used to work in a shoe manufacturing facility. So some of the challenges that we face are just trying to overcome those previous misconceptions of what working in a manufacturing facility is like. And so, and that kind of fits into the topic we're going to talk about a little bit about today in regards to employment branding. So.
No, you're absolutely right. And that is true. I mean, you're one of the few manufacturers that still have manufacturing facilities here in the U.S. regarding shoes, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, New Balance is the only major athletic footwear company making shoes here in the United States. Our competitors don't make any product here in the U.S.
Well, that's a huge tribute to your organization and your organization for doing that. Are you finding, from a standpoint of talent, and as you said, we're going to talk about engagement, when you're finding a standpoint of talent, are you finding that people are coming with the set of skills necessary, the changing having to do with technology today and all the changes, especially even in manufacturing environment, are they coming from the schools, are they coming from the general population with the actual skill sets needed to handle these new tech machines and computers?
For us, in our world of shoe manufacturing, we definitely have new equipment and technology, but we still have a sense of craftsmanship. So some of the equipment that we're using is very similar to what we were using 20 years ago. And so with the new types of equipment that we're using, we haven't really run into an issue from a technology standpoint, because some of the equipment is really touch screen and, you know, computer based, and, you know, those basic skills have been transferable for us. You know, I think more so what we find a challenge with individuals is coming from an environment into an environment where it's collaborative, teamwork, you know, learning a variety of different jobs, and being able to give and receive feedback sometimes is challenging for people. Especially in technology today, where so much conversation happens in texting. You know, there just isn't, you know, young folks coming out of school today, oftentimes that's their preferred choice of communication is texting as opposed to having real conversations. And so sometimes that can be a challenge.
No, I know. And when we certainly are talking about an engaged workforce, some of the challenges that are out there is the generational differences. Being able to have supervisors who may be in their 40s or 50s, you know, really being able to engage and speak to individuals coming out of school, maybe 18, 22, 24 years old. and maybe even senior management that are in their late 50s and really having that dynamic. So talk to me a little bit about some of the things that you're doing in your organization to deal with this challenge, and maybe if you can provide an example of something you're doing, and then certainly we can go through the steps you're taking from that point on.
Yeah, well, it's really just trying to allow individuals the opportunity to understand the generational differences. You know, that's really where it all starts, is you got to have a foundation to know where the differences are coming from. And then it's about just trying to, you know, bridge, make awareness and then bridge the gaps. And so certainly on our side, you know, right in from day one, spending the time with individuals to, you know, every organization has their own culture. And so, you know, my examples, I guess, and my advice would be in your communication, in your orientations, in your onboarding, in your trainings, you know, really try to embed what the expectations are from the organization, the culture, and again, this kind of gets into engagement as well, is what is the rallying cry, what's the organizational mission that everyone can align to? And I think that in and of itself provides that guiding light, that track that everyone can be focused towards.
Yeah, you talk about this being top-down. It is critical that the organization starts at the top and aligns its mission statement and its values and its core beliefs, correct? So that everybody's on the same page.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, I've seen organizations that have a mission statement, but it's not top-down, and it's not really connected. And so when it's disconnected, or when you don't have good mechanisms in place by which communication takes place from the top-down, and, you know, things are disconnected as far as evaluations and recognition systems and those types of things, then it's not fluid, and it doesn't all tie together.
You know, a lot of times, and we've certainly had many individuals come on the show and talk about engagement, and a lot of them talk about, you know, making sure that employees are happy and that they're having a good time, and make sure that, you know, this helps engage them. But it's not all about that, is it? It's really more to engagement than just making sure that people are happy.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there's a vast difference between those two. You know, certainly you want everyone to be happy and come in and enjoy what they're doing, but engagement really is different than that. And, you know, engagement is really about, as I said, you know, what's that mission? What's the goal of the organization, and how do you align individuals to that? And so there's differences that really comes down to that emotional attachment to the job that individuals have and to the organization. And so, you know, you can have someone that comes into work and is happy about what coming to work and having fun, but if they're not really engaged and driving the business to the goals and objectives of and how their role ties to that, then they're really not truly engaged.
Well, just coming in and having fun, look, you know, you can go into work, have fun, because you're not doing anything. It's not necessarily the, you know, it's not necessarily, woo, it's a great job. I don't have to do a darn thing all day. It's fabulous. I get paid well, and yes, I'm very happy.
So, yeah, the key is to drive engagement and have fun at the same time.
That is the key.
Yeah.
That is exactly the key. Are you mostly talking in terms of written communication? Is there audio or visual communication? Because as you've spoken and we kind of talk about, you know, people view the written word one way and they might view a video another way. To really make that connection, we've heard a lot that it's really good to actually hear directly from the individual, not just in the written form. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, ours is it's a video message. So for all of our associates that have, you know, we're fortunate that we've got an intranet, and so that gets downloaded. People can watch that at their leisure. It comes out, notification that the new CEO message has come out. You can go on, watch that video message. You know, it talks about details of the previous month, how that ties into our mission and our objectives. And then in the manufacturing environment, we've actually take those videos right to the floor and have those messages played on a monthly basis. And then at the local level, again, our managers can talk to what our manufacturing associates are doing and how that ties to the overall mission.
No, I think that's great. I think that's not something you hear a lot about, that actually a CEO will take the time once a month. You might hear it in a half a year or some sort of, you know, special event. They come out and talk. But I think it's really empowering to hear from the head of the organization every month. I mean, that's keeping somebody updated. That's keeping them understanding and how the business, you know, is running and what's going on. And people do have better buy-in that way.
Yeah, not only do we hear from the CEO every month, but also at top levels of the organization, in all of our EVPs across the organization. They also, you know, we've got a series of video messages that they play to the organization in regards to updates to their business and how they're driving to how their organization, you know, whether it be sales, marketing, what they're doing and how they're driving to our goals and objectives. So it's really about, again, communication, driving that from the top down, creating visibility and getting everybody on the same page. And the more that you can do that, the more connected people are going to feel to the organization and the goals.
No, you're absolutely correct. The plus side is that once you have an engaged workforce, you certainly have, as you said, higher retention rate, improved productivity. But it takes more than that. It takes people to see a future. And talk about, you know, how you engage the individuals, especially in the HR side, to succession planning, involvement, making sure that they understand that they can have a future, even if they're up in the middle of a manufacturing facility in northern Maine. Because, yeah, you know, there is this perception sometimes when you're in a rural area that you're on an island. And, you know, you're not that engaged with corporate office, which is somewhere else. So, you know, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. Much like, you know, I've talked about the challenge of sometimes recruiting when people have in their mind about working in a manufacturing facility and what that looks like. You know, all too often people think that working in a manufacturing role and it's just that's going to be my career for the next 20 years. And that's certainly not what we promote and not the environment. And so, you know, what we've done is really we've taken succession planning, you know, down all the way down to the shop floor. And, you know, we've along the way we've created positions and opportunities for individuals to aspire to. And so creating an environment where, you know, even if you're making shoes in the manufacturing line, you know, what having a conversation, having their manager have a conversation with them about, okay, so what's your goals and aspirations? You know, do you want to be a team leader? Do you want to be a supervisor? Do you want to work in our quality organization? And then it's about, so it's engaging them in regards to where they want to grow, where they want to develop, what's their interest. And then it's creating a plan around, okay, what do we need to do to help get you there? And so we've been able to create internally an organization that's helped coach and provide those conversations and that type of training to help individuals who have aspirations that want to grow. And again, it's an investment in your own organization that keeps people engaged and keeps people employed and helps with the longevity of the organization.
What do you think an organization who may be out there that's thinking about either improving their engagement or talking about succession planning or really, you know, thinking about putting these type of messages or communication tools in place, what could you provide them for some thoughts as to how to start? I mean, one of the things that sometimes you hear is, how do you start? You know, you've been doing something for a while. How do you get people involved, get them engaged? You know, people are technically sometimes skeptical at the beginning. That's a very common thing. How do you get them engaged and make them really believe?
Well, again, I think, first of all, it's got to come from the top down. So you've got to have leadership, all levels of leadership within your organization kind of on board with the direction that you're trying to go. And then, you know, I think that's probably one of the most important keys. then beyond that, you know, I know organizations struggle, you know, from financially with, you know, because you got to have resources to be able to try to pull all this off. And so certainly, you know, we haven't added all, you know, lots of headcount to be able to do this. So it's really about trying to be creative with who are your in-house experts that could be a mentor for an individual to help them grow in a particular area of the business. And so not only does that mentor then become, you know, a resource for this other individual, but that's a growth opportunity for them in and of itself. And so, you know, before you know it, you've got lots of people who are helping other individuals who have aspirations, but then through that process themselves, they're actually, you know, they're improving their own facilitation skills, they're improving their, you know, other skills, and they're getting benefits out of that process that they weren't necessarily thinking that they would get. And so it kind of helps, it perpetuates itself as you kind of create those connections.
Sure. When you're talking to employees, some have been around a long time, what is it you hear from employees that they say keeps them at New Balance?
It's really about the brand and the fact that there's a huge sense of pride that New Balance is making shoes here in the United States and nobody else is doing it. There's a strong sense just to that and the organization itself, who we are, our investment to our associates, and the brand itself. You know, when we are doing our employment branding, you know, we're going to job fairs, we're going to, you know, different venues, talking to people from the outside and trying to recruit people, we talk about that message. And internally, that's what we hear from our own associates. And so that's, you know, that's a driving force for us, is just our brand and our image and who we are. And, you know, that resonates internally and externally.
No, I think it would, and certainly that's the rallying cry, right? That's what you're all surrounding, the fact that you still do it here in the U.S., and that everybody's proud of the fact that they do that, and the fact that you engage the workforce and letting them know they still have a future, and knowing why it's important from the top down is an overall discussion that I think is very important, because they can see the message, they can understand it, they can be clear about it, and everybody's aligned on the same page.
Right. You know, another piece around recognition that I haven't talked about, not recognition, but engagement, I'll talk about recognition in a minute, is, you know, engaging individuals, anytime that you're making any changes within your organization or you're trying to make improvements, you know, I've seen this over and over again when we at New Balance or other organizations, when I talk with leaders from other companies, whenever you have an opportunity to involve your associates with that change, seek out their ideas, seek out their input, actually involve them in layout changes, involve them in, you know, hey, we're trying to improve this process, what are your thoughts? Anytime you have an opportunity to do that, seek that out. Because that's going to gain you so much, one, engagement, but also make your associates feel proud about the fact that they're involved in the process. And so whenever you make a change and you don't involve them, it's sometimes quicker, it's easier, but you don't get the same results in the end.
No, you're absolutely correct. I mean, that is a key element, especially when you have so many employees, right? Because
yeah,
it would be so
exactly.
So much simpler if you had 10 employees, you make a decision, it is pretty simple to get everybody's buy-in.
Yeah.
But when you have a lot.
And that's not revolutionary, right?
No,
but
it's not.
It's, you know, you know, I've read it in books, and I've seen both of those situations happen, and, you know, It's certainly, in the short term, it's quick, it's easy, but in the long term, obviously you got to weigh that out with whatever change you're trying to make. But
sure,
whenever you can involve your associates in the long run, that's going to bear more fruit for you. Yeah.
The last section I kind of want to go over is the recognition and reward section, and how you think this helps feed the behaviors and results having to do with engagement and keeping employees excited about working for an organization. And so if you can kind of talk about those areas and what you've done, I think that would be important to round this out.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, trying to create, you know, we've got our communication from the top down. We're trying to engage our associates with communication, involving them in the process. And so the recognition really ties into, as you said, round this out. And so the recognition, your recognition programs really need to be aligned with those behaviors that you're really, that as an organization, you're trying to influence towards driving the business. And so our recognition programs are really driven around improvements to the process, improvements around quality, reducing throughput time, and so, you know, those types of things. And so if you're, you know, we've specifically seen, you know, with our recognition programs, that as those were tied to the business, that, you know, you started seeing more and more of those types of activities taking place. And, you know, sure, recognition programs, you know, they can be very vast in regards to what the cost is, but they don't have to be. And so, you know, your recognition programs can be really little cost, and in some respects, they don't have to be any cost. It's really just a matter of recognizing individuals when they're doing something that's in the area that's helping to drive your goals and objectives, and taking the time to recognize them for it. And that in and of itself will help drive future behaviors.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about things that aren't revolutionary, and certainly those two things you're talking about isn't. But the problem is not that they're not revolutionary. The fact that they just don't get done. Supervisors don't take the time to necessarily just tell somebody that they've done a good job, that they're, you know, that they, you're recognizing them for doing something that is really good. It's almost assumed that, hey, you're working there, you're doing a good job.
Right.
And that is the key, that an organization has taken the time to make it a priority and to really make that happen. That's right. What I see as being one of the key to New Balance is the fact that you guys really do take the time to talk to employees, engage them, get their input, and tell them when they're doing things right, as well as, of course, disciplining them when they do things wrong. But I mean, that's the key.
Well, and by no means are we perfect, but I think that the important thing is that you embed it in a process. And so, you know, over the course of the last 10, 12 years, you know, we've really been on a lean manufacturing journey and changed many of our processes. And so recognition is one of these, is that at different points within the work day and within the month, you know, we have embedded in different meetings and at different points in time when supervisors are getting together with their associates, part of their process is to talk about recognition. And so you've got to embed that within, you know, if you just kind of leave it open and you've got a great program, but you don't have it embedded in anything, then it can easily fall to the wayside. So, you know, I think that's why many companies have recognition programs and they just don't get utilized, is because it's not tied in with something else that's being done.
So no, you're absolutely right.
You've got to make it part of a process and make it a priority.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you very much for taking the time today to be on the HR Power Hour. Certainly anybody that wants to connect with you will be able to go to the HRPowerHour.com and certainly be able to see your smiling face and picture and bio, as well as the contact information. And, you know, certainly I want to take the time to thank you for taking some time out of your busy day and coming on the show.
Well, great. Well, thank you for the opportunity. I'd love to talk to anybody that had any questions. And like I said, a lot of what I talked about today isn't necessarily revolutionary, but, it's really just tying it together. And hopefully I've provided some good insight and thoughts for people to think about.
No, you haven't. We want to thank you. You are listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money.
Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice, continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
Established in 2009, CrossFit Casco Bay is Portland's most experienced strength training facility. CrossFit is the principal strength and conditioning program for many police academies, elite special forces, champion martial artists, housewives, children, and everything in between. At CrossFit Casco Bay, you'll be able to reduce stress, manage weight and body composition, enhance physical strength and endurance, improve flexibility, and recover from injury or illness in a safe environment. The time is now. Stop in for a free demo. For more information, please visit CrossFitCascoBay.com. CrossFit Casco Bay, forging elite fitness.
In today's digital age of instant communication, the art of conversation is being lost. Too often, verbal communication is reduced to shouting, not talking. Join me, Steve Woods, also known as Steve-O, for Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, for inspired conversations with extraordinary guests. We'll talk sports, health, green, and life its own self. Catch Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on News Talk WLOB. AM 1310, streaming live on WLOBradio.com.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we're talking today with Mark Holmes, president of Health Coaches Incorporated here in Portland, Maine. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
So, you know, health coaches, workplace wellness, all the buzzwords today. At the end of the day, why should an organization really decide to think about putting wellness in their company? Because, you know, as you know today, it's a challenge trying to bring in new programs into organizations. They cost money. You know, tell me why you think companies should really take a look at wellness and what it can really do for them.
Well, there's a number of different reasons. It's interesting. I saw a statistic this week that I think only a third of employees currently are engaged in their work or find their work enjoyable. And I think one of the primary reasons that companies are offering non-traditional benefits, if you will, and I think wellness programs sometimes fall under the guise of a non-traditional program, is really to enhance the work experience for their employees. You know, the argument could be made oftentimes that, you know, it's the right thing to do with regards to healthcare expenses, but unfortunately, for the majority of employers in the state of Maine anyway, they fall under a community rating with insurance. So quite honestly, if they're less than 50, and that's going to be changing to less than 100 employees, there isn't really a lot of traction that they have with the direct expenses associated with the insurance. So it's got to be more than motivated simply from the dollars that they're spending on health insurance. And a lot of companies that we work with model themselves out of, you know, against some of the larger companies, the IDEXs, the LL Beans, and they want to offer some of these programs because, you know, they're trying to invest in the health of their employees. They recognize that, you know, oftentimes, you know, with some downsizing, they're being asked to work longer hours. They're taking on additional responsibilities, and they're trying to make those employees more productive and to, you know, have more job satisfaction. And oftentimes when I sit with an HR director or another individual whose responsibility is to bring some of these programs to the company, I'll use myself as an example. And I'm certainly, you know, a normal, you know, everyday, you know, 10 to 12 hour a week employee. But, you know, outside of routine physicals and preventative care, I haven't utilized my health plan tremendously. And part of that is because, you know, I think I live a pretty moderate life. And part of that has to do with, you know, preventable things that we can focus on, whether it's exercise or diet or stress management. So I think a lot of employers are looking to bring some of those programs into the workplace just to help their employees become more productive, you know, to be, you know, more engaged in their work and enjoy the amount of time that they're spending at the office, which quite honestly, those numbers are growing. They're not diminished in terms of the number of hours that they're working.
So when you're talking to a HR professional or a business leader and you're talking to them about workplace wellness and they say, okay, this sounds good. I can have an organization come in and talk to my group about wellness. How are you going to, for example, counter a question having to do with people saying, well, you know what, that's my business. Why should somebody be, you know, coaching me on trying to help me lose weight or help me do things when I may not want to do that? And why should the company be, you know, doing that in any way and spending money on it, which they could be giving me more raises or more increases or other benefits that I see a future to? So I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate here because these are real questions. These are real questions.
You need to answer because you don't want to invest the money and really have your participation numbers not merit the program. So, you know, I think oftentimes it's really got to be driven from the top down. You know, if you don't have buy-in from senior management, if you don't have individuals who are really champions for the program and conveying to the employees that really we're doing this as a benefit to you. And again, going back to my original point, if it's perceived by the employee that the motivation is simply to identify those individuals that are at highest risk or I'm going to be targeted as a liability for the company, then to your point, yeah, they're going to say, well, why would I participate in this program? So I think it really comes back to the way in which it's delivered. And I think the important piece out of the gate is to really ask your employees, you know, pose the question to them, what programs would you like to see, you know, us offer? Are there things personally that, you know, you feel you need some assistance in? And, you know, in today's culture, there's so much misinformation out there with regards to exercise and diet and weight loss. And, you know, I think if they look to their employees as really being an advocate for them and it's positioned in a way where their feedback is valued, you know, you do get greater participation. And, you know, and oftentimes, you know, employers will create simple incentives, you know, for participation, whether it's, you know, workplace challenges, whether it's walking programs or pedometer challenges, or tying that to some sort of a community fundraiser, whether it's, we've had a lot of groups in this area participate in the Dempsey Challenge, for example, or the Trek Across Maine. So, you know, there's different motivators for individuals, and I think the key with that is really trying to identify what those are and really position it in a way that it's seen as a benefit, you know, to the employee. And I think, you know, that's, as I said originally, that's one of the things I think that goes a long way in terms of why employees are offering these programs is because, you know, they are trying to foster this culture of, you know, supportive assistance that moves people along this continuum of wellness from, you know, potentially, you know, poor managed health to, you know, one that focuses on prevention and where the individual can really see some improvements personally that do help the group as a whole and do resonate with the company and the culture and, you know, the overall, you know, workplace environment, if you will. And also it's important, too, you know, we position ourselves, so, you know, oftentimes when we come in, you know, we're a third-party administrator. We're not tied directly to the company, and oftentimes we're not tied directly with the insurance company. We do some work with insurance providers, but it's very important to have that separation, I think, for the perception of the employees that, you know, because there is this feeling with some groups that, you know, well, this is sort of like this big brother mentality, and what is this information going to be used for, and am I going to be, you know, singled out as high risk? So, you know, we do a really good job in terms of communicating that with the employees that, you know, the data that's collected is obviously aggregate, that no individual data is shared with the employee or the insurance company, and we're really there, you know, as an advocate for the employee.
It's interesting. You brought up a point that I was going to talk about a little later, but I'll bring it up now, which is, you know, you're an individual third-party group, Health Coaches, Inc., and you provide, obviously, wellness. There are large insurance carriers that provide wellness, and I can see by your answer that you're really talking about the separation between the insurance company and the third-party administrator for wellness, because there can be a perception of them using that information. Is that an area that you think is important to an organization, important to employees?
Well, I think it is, and one of the things that, you know, we try to focus on, and, you know, there are some insurance companies that do a better job in focusing on prevention. There are others that will provide it, but again, going back to the point about community rating, unless you're a larger group, those wellness dollars aren't available as part of their insurance. Ones that we have worked with that do a better job, if you will, of really promoting and marketing those services, you know, we've had fairly good traction in rolling those programs out, but again, you know, it is an uphill battle at times with the employees, the perception of what is this information going to be used for? You know, am I going to be, you know, singled out, or, you know, with the downsizing that's going on? But we've had we've had success in both. We work with a lot of groups that are self-insured. You've got a lot of companies right now moving from traditional PPOs to, you know, HSA accounts, health savings accounts, which present different challenges. So, for example, there's a large group in Portland that were moving employees from a PPO to an HSA. Well, the out-of-pocket expense for the employee was going to be increased going to an HSA. So one of the things that the group, you know, smartly wanted to do was counter the negative, feedback from the employee saying, hey, you know, I understand it's expensive to provide insurance, but, geez, all of a sudden now my out-of-pocket expense has doubled. So what they have done is they've used our programming to front-load some incentives into the HSA. So when they made this transition from traditional PPO to an HSA, and then when they participated in a baseline screening, where we came in and we did coaching sessions, we did a blood draw for cholesterol and glucose, and we collected some very useful data for the employee, those individuals were rewarded with a $500 check basically deposited into their HSA account. So it went a long way in terms of easing some of the growing pains, if you will, of moving and migrating those employees from traditional health insurance to, you know, if you will, non-traditional or the HSA, which is gaining some traction now just because of the costs associated with providing insurance to the employees. So sometimes you have to integrate the programming based on the fact that it's the implications are directly affected with the insurance. So, and I think it starts from the top down. It's clear communication, and it has to be, you know, made clear that, you know, this is really a benefit to the employees. And oftentimes, once we start the process, once we get in, we sit with the employees, they go through the screening process. You know, it's not overly clinical. You know, our staff are all, college, master-level health educators and physiologists. They're not sitting in a doctor's office. Those barriers go away rather quickly, and we get a lot of very useful information that, you know, the end user, which really, as an educator, I'm most concerned about, walks away with. But the employee also, you know, gathers a lot of information that really help them make some decisions with regards to programming that will run throughout the year.
So you're talking about getting buy-in from the top, which, of course, needs to be done for any major program, because that's who's going to make sure that it actually gets implemented within the organization.
Right.
When an organization is considering doing this, maybe they're not, you know, they've heard the buzzwords, but maybe they're not familiar with what a good wellness program is, how it's set up, the components maybe.
Yep.
Can you give kind of a little overview of maybe in bullet point, what are the five steps, the six steps, the things, the components that really make up a good wellness plan?
Absolutely. I mean, the first thing really, it starts with, you know, collecting information. I mean, you need to have the information in front of you that really allows you to objectively look at, you know, where we need to focus our attention. Now, I say that, you know, we'll typically go in and we'll do a screening. Well, the thing to remember is when you sit with an employee and you go through a screening, this may be the only opportunity you really have to meet with this employee, because most companies aren't going to mandate that you participate in the program. You know, they can provide incentives, and we use a saying, it's like a frozen carrot. You're not being penalized, but you're not maybe getting some of the rewards. The example I use, for example, of front-loading the HSA. if you don't participate. So what we do is, during that screening process, the first step in collecting that data is to really provide a coaching session for that employee, because you may not see them again. And as we all know from, going to our physician, physicians are being pulled pretty thin as well. So oftentimes you may go in for your physical, and if the numbers come back in the normative range, you may not hear anything. You may not hear anything from the physician. The nurse comes in, does your blood pressure. There's no real explanation of what systolic or diastolic blood pressure is. Is there such a thing as good cholesterol? So we really use that initial screening as a coaching session, giving the employee some useful information and some action steps that if they don't participate beyond that, they've taken away some useful information. The second step really is the reporting. Executive summaries, really digging deeper from an aggregate standpoint as to what the needs are of the group. And that really determines really where they want to focus emphasis throughout the year. When we identify, is it, hypertension? Is it stress management? Is it, blood pressure? And should we be running blood pressure screenings? Do we need to partner with, for some groups we found that prenatal prenatal issues are an issue, so we partner with the Babies in You program through the March of Dimes. The reporting really helps us flush out really where we need to focus our attention. And that leads really into the third step, which is to build an action plan. Sit with that wellness group, if one has been established or if one hasn't, to work towards establishing an employee-based wellness group, and then come up with the programming throughout the year, and kind of, dovetail that with some national programs. So, for example, if it's heart health, partner maybe with the American Heart Association about doing, blood pressure screenings during the month of November, or, partnering with the American Lung Association. But really finding resources in the community to create a programming calendar, if you will, that shadows really what the needs are and the interests as well. I mean, we talked about from the start really getting the buy-in from the employee, hopefully in the first step, or in to kind of back up a bit, that you've done some sort of surveying to determine really where the interests are. And then beyond that, it's really then determining, really setting some matrix. How frequently are we going to be, rescreening? How often are we going to be surveying employees throughout the year to determine that the programs that we're offering are meeting their needs? But those are really the main components, really collecting the data, really digging into the information, finding out what programs resonate, where the interest is, finding those programs within the community or even individuals within the company. It's amazing sometimes we'll sit with individuals, in a group that, have a friend who's a massage therapist and will offer on-site chair massage quarterly. Or, there's an individual who, has a background in the culinary arts and will partner with our dietitian to offer cooking programs. So oftentimes, we can really create some pretty unique and quite honestly cost-effective programs that employees may not have thought about.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking with Mark Holmes, president of Health Coaches, Inc., here in Portland, Maine. Mark, again, thanks for being on the show.
It's my pleasure.
All right, well, we've been talking a lot about wellness because obviously that's what you do. And, one of the things that has come up a lot here in 2013 as we prepare for 2014 is the Affordable Care Act, or commonly known as Obamacare. And We've had a number of individuals on the show talking about, you know, the effects, what might happen, what could happen, because obviously we're not 100% sure what's going to happen because all the regulations haven't been written and all those things happen. But where do you see wellness fitting into this mix having to do with the new Affordable Care Act?
Well, I think it's inevitable that it's going to play a larger role, and certainly, you know, selfishly from a business standpoint, I'm hoping so. But, you know, I think people are starting to realize, whether it's at the individual level, the corporate level, that, you know, we need to be focusing a little more attention on prevention. And as I say, you know, I use myself as an example, and those individuals that, you know, live a life that focuses a little bit more attention on prevention, you know, tend to utilize, you know, traditional health insurance a little less frequently. And as you mentioned, I think, you know, some of the application processes have not been finalized, but there are going to be some dollars available. And again, depending on how this all shakes out for small and mid-sized companies who do not currently have wellness programs in place to start those programs. And that's one of the things that in the work that we do, working with the HR representatives and some of the brokers, is helping employees sort of navigate where those dollars are available. Because as you pointed out at the beginning, you know, everyone, I think, would love to offer these programs. The challenge becomes, how do you fund these things? And as I pointed out, a lot of the things that you can do have very little cost associated with it, but there is an associated cost. And I think the responsible thing to do is to focus a little more attention on prevention. So, you know, we're hopeful that some of the legislation that is being talked about, as I say, provides wellness dollars for groups that have not currently implemented a program. I know that there's some chatter about some grant monies that are available, but I think overall, I think, you know, the trending is going to be more towards prevention. And it's something that years ago, I started in the late 80s and early 90s, there was more focus on wellness, there was more focus on prevention. And as things change and as, you know, insurance rates have gone up and operating margins have become tighter, you know, some of the focus has gone away. And you know, it can seem overwhelming, and I think one of the challenges that we run into is, again, you know, this sense that, yeah, we'd like to offer these programs, but unless we're going to see a direct return on our investment, are they worth implementing? And as I said, we've had great success with companies that have implemented the programs, and we've got a track record in terms of some of the control groups with groups we've met with for a number of years and looking at, you know, ambulatory costs and some of the associated costs with groups that have rolled these programs out versus ones that haven't. But our hopes is obviously with some of the changes in healthcare that the focus will shift back towards prevention, because from a common sense standpoint, it seems to be the right thing to do. So that's the hopes anyway.
Certainly this is a nationwide trend. I mean, obviously our show here broadcasts across the country, and we're proud to say that we're being listened to in about 32 states now across the nation.
Wonderful.
Do you see in the next year or two anything that you could tell the audience that says, hey, these are things that are definitely going to change or definitely going to happen that you think could make a really big impact in a company in terms of cost? Because at the end of the day, there is a conflict sometimes between HR and finance, right? HR
yep.
wants to do this, and finance, oh, it's bottom line.
Yep.
You're talking the language of CFO versus SVP of HR.
Absolutely.
And neither one is wrong. Neither one is absolutely
nope.
wrong, because that's their area of expertise, and that's what they need to do. So how do you sell that? And by saying that these couple things will move the needle in your company, these couple things will save money.
Well, and that's always the challenge, you know, and I worked for a large bank, you know, early in my career where, again, the challenge is always to draw some attention to the programs that you're offering. Again, you know, when you're dealing with some of the, as you mentioned, CFOs and those individuals that are saying, hey, you know what we're trying to do is really, you know, focus our energies and attention and resources on things that drive revenue. Well, on the other side, it's like the old saying goes, it's not necessarily how much you make, but how little you spend. And at the end of the day, there's no question that healthcare costs are increasing, that companies are spending more on insurance. And I think what's going to happen is the trending is going to be companies are going to be able to be a little bit more aggressive with their insurance providers to say, listen, if we implement these programs and we're doing our part and we're helping to control and move our employees, you know, along this continuum of wellness, and we're seeing that, you know, doctor visits are less frequent, and we're recognizing individuals in the early stages of diabetes, and, you know, they're avoiding 10, 15 years of medications, we want some, you know, some compensation for that. We want some consideration for the work that we're doing. And, you know, it isn't something I don't think that's necessarily going to happen overnight, but I think the trending is companies are going to be in a position where, it, you know, the market's going to be a little bit more wide open. And I think companies that are taking the steps to improve the health of their employees and have the data to support it are going to be in a better position to put a little more pressure on the insurance companies to say, hey, you know, we're doing our part. What can you do to help us? And it needs to be something more than offering a website where my employees can go and print out, you know, information on diabetes. We want you to play an active part in saying, hey, we're going to fund some of these programs, or we're going to start tracking really closely what your expenses are, the programs that you have, and the progress that you're making, and we'll come to the table with potentially some reductions in what you're paying in premiums. But, you know, I think the trending is to move towards, again, employees being more proactive, and I think insurance companies responding to that favorably. Because it's like anything else, is, you know, if the market opens up a little bit, it's going to draw more attention, I think, to those groups that are doing the things that intellectually are going to save on expenses down the road.
You know, we're here at the end of our segment here today, and I think that we've talked a lot about workplace wellness, which I think is a critical part of a successful workforce. You know, when you're really talking about it at the end of the day, you're talking about your people, your biggest asset, and taking care of them and making sure that they are provided with the ability to stay healthy. Gets
Absolutely.
Them to work on time, gets them to do what they need to do on time, and you know, really helps you overall. So when somebody is interested in maybe setting up this program or at least talking to you about it, Mark, how do they get a hold of Health Coaches, Inc.?
We have our website, healthcoaches.biz. We offer free consultation either by phone or preferably in person to do a no-cost, no-obligation consultation to sit down, take a look at, you know, any programs that you may have in place, or if you're at the really early stages of, as you pointed out, just not knowing where to begin. I mean, I'm passionate. At the end of the day, I'm an educator. I mean, I've been doing this for over 20 years, and, you know, I could talk for hours about this. You know, it's very interesting to me to sit with groups of blue-collar, white-collar, small groups, 1 to 50 employees, and we have groups that we work with over 500 employees. But we're available, we're local, and we provide services right now throughout New England. I mean, we're working with groups down in Boston, Rhode Island, and all the way up to Lincoln, Maine. So, you know, as I say, for me, it's a passion of mine, and pick up the phone and, you know, give a call or make arrangements to have us come in, and we'd love to chat with them.
After this show, all listeners will be able to go to the HRPowerHour.com site. Certainly Mark's information will be there, contact information, website information, a little bio about Mark and the organization. Mark, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. Again, Mark Holmes, president of Health Coaches Incorporated here in Portland.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Mark, thank you. And now your HR tip of the week. According to Matthew Tarpey from CareerBuilder, tips for surviving your first networking event include dressing to impress. Don't forget business cards. Take notes. Don't force a sale. Show interest. And definitely keep in touch. Those are your tips for surviving your first networking event. And that's your HR tip of the week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Maine State Representative Amy Volk. She's going to be talking about why it is important that employers and HR professionals become engaged and make their voices heard in the legislature, and why it's important that they understand the legislative process. We're going to be talking about some important bills to watch for the 126th Maine Legislative Session. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.